All right, our next presenter is Dr. David Clark. David Clark is a trauma surgeon at Maine Medical Center in Portland, Maine, the other Portland. He's a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and also has master's degrees in statistics and public health. He's currently professor of surgery at Tufts Medical School and a core faculty member of the Harvard Injury Control Research Center. Welcome.
Thank you. It's not just the other Portland, it's the original Portland, after which your much bigger Portland was named. I've actually been to the original Portland in England, but I don't want to eat into my 15 minutes too much here, but we can talk about that some other time. I don't have any thing to acknowledge as far as conflicts of interest. I do want to thank the CDC for the grant which supported the work that you're going to hear about, and also my co-authors, both in statistics and clinical matters, who it was very helpful to have their advice. The 2 years ago, I presented to this conference the methods section of this APHA injury control about this problem of data showing times to death in trauma patients, injury patients, which classically is thought to have a trimodal distribution, which doesn't make much sense biologically or in any other way, and trying to figure out where that comes from and what to do about it so that all this data can actually be used for studies that are of interest to us and not just thrown out because there are these funny anomalies. So this is a famous article by a trauma surgeon from Portland, Oregon, very good and famous surgeon, Don Trunke, from 30 years ago, showing this trimodal distribution, and this has been preached for the entire time to surgeons and anybody else who's willing to listen, that this is what the time until death looks like for people that are injured. And why biologically this should happen, it just doesn't make any sense. You know, first of all, this third peak, as you can see, look at the x-axis on the graph there. Suddenly it goes from being hours to being weeks. And if you take any curve, like an exponential curve that I've graphed on the right-hand side here, and you compress the time axis, you'll get a little blip there. And so that's just an anomaly of how you present the data. So it's pretty easy to dispose of that one as being just not real. But if you look at FARS data, and everybody knows FARS, you know, it's all the car crashes in America for the last 35 years. It's all there, a wonderful data source. But you do get this second blip in the incidence of death. Why is that? It's not something you can explain away, as I did the third blip. Anyway, I'm not going to go into detail about why is that, mostly because we talked about it 2 years ago, and it's published in World Journal of Surgery, you can see there. The reason is this this is the hospital deaths. And what happens if you go to the hospital and you're dead is they refuse to accept that you're dead, and they beat on you and operate on you and do all kinds of things to you for half an hour or more, and then decide that you're dead because they couldn't bring you around. And then the senior doctor in the room looks at the clock and says, time of death, 8:54. And it's not the time when your heart stopped. It's when people gave up the attempt to revive you. And so you get this sort of built-in lag in the death times. And that makes sense. And we talked about this 2 years ago and it's published. And the question is now, okay, what do we do about it? Do we just sort of throw out the data because we can't use it? Or is there some way we can deal with the data? And that's what we determined to figure out. The concept of interval censoring seemed to be a good way to start. In other words, we know that the person died. We know they died between time X and time Y. And we assume that there's a smooth curve. And we don't make any other assumptions about when that death occurred. And so this is a useful concept in the situation where we have death times that we don't actually know when the death occurred in a physiologic sense. And so you take some smooth curve. This is Volodi Weibel, and I noticed down in the Stata booth, you know, you can get a little bookmark with Letty Weibel's name and biography on there. And so if anybody's really interested in this man, that's the place to start. So you assume some smooth curve, and the software is there to adjust for the fact that you don't know exactly when the event occurred. So that's a start. But if we want to know the problem of the effect of an intervention that occurred during that interval, it gets a little tougher. So for this study, we used FARS, which probably most of you know about. And then also there's a sampling, the NAS sampling. There's NAS general estimate system, and there's NAS crashworthiness data system. Neither one of those normally has times until hospitalization or times until EMS involvement. But it turns out, I found out by talking to some guy presenting a poster here 2 years ago, that for 2 years they did a special study where that was available back in 2002 and 3. And so it's very helpful to go to these meetings. You find out all kinds of things that you wouldn't have otherwise figured out. And so with that little clue, I was able to combine, for those 2 years, data from fatal crashes as well as data from non-fatal crashes. And so that gave us a way to look into this. Because the thing we wanted to do, and which is sort of natural to do, is to look at time until death as sort of an outcome, and then the effect of an intervention that occurs somewhere along the line. And this normally is not that hard to do. It's called a time-varying covariate. And, you know, the covariate is not there until EMS arrives, and then it's there after EMS arrives, and it's a 1-0 type of thing. That's not too hard. The hard part is, what do you do if you have interval censoring and a time-varying covariate? That's not something that your standard software can manage to do. So we had to think up a way to deal with that. And we went all over the map and tried to read about it and so forth and so on, tried different things. And anyway, we came up with a solution, which I'm going to tell you about briefly, because we don't have time to go into all the mathematics and all this kind of thing. It turns out it's not that hard to do. Basically, what you do is you select your endpoints for the interval. So you select your interval endpoints. You estimate a Weibull model, just sort of taking the data as they are. And then you do an imputation thing where you get a random number and you plug in, you sort of guess a time just randomly in that interval. Then you estimate the Weibull model again. Then you go back to the beginning and you keep iterating back and forth. And eventually this converges. It just takes a few iterations, actually only maybe 4 or 5 iterations, and you get an answer, which, assuming that the distribution really is Weibull, and you know that these times really are random points, it gives you an answer, and it seems to make sense, and it seems to work. So we thought that was pretty neat. So if you do all that, you get effects which seem reasonable. For age, this is the increasing the chance of death. These are the fixed effects. We'll get down to the time varying effects in a minute. You're more likely to die if any one of these things is there. Okay, no surprises there. Those are things you've seen before. Okay, then we get to the time varying effects, and lo and behold, it seems to be good to have EMS show up, but if it's more than 30 minutes before they get to the hospital, it's not quite as good. In fact, it's not significantly better than just being out in the road. The famous golden hour concept seems to be proving. And then when you get to the hospital, your hazard ratio goes down and goes down further and further. This is all with comparison to somebody who's still out on the road with no help at all. And that all makes sense. But now we can actually measure the relative size of this effect. Where if you just threw out the data, you wouldn't have any way to do that. And it seems to work. And we also found, you know, that there's a rural effect. There doesn't seem to be any interaction between rural and EMS, but there is an interaction with rural and hospital, although it wasn't significant due to small numbers. So I'm not going to dwell on any of this, but I just wanted to present the idea to people. Here's kind of what's happening. Is the light bars are the actual data, and you see that second blip there, it goes up, and then the darker bars are kind of what you get after the imputation. It kind of smooths things out for you in a way that's, you can't prove that it's right, but it's a sort of a defensible set of assumptions, and it makes the data tractable, so you can actually do a model, and the model results seem to kind of coincide with what you might expect. And you could take this and compare one, if you had the data, you could compare one hospital to another or one state to another or whatever you wanted to do in a way that would kind of make sense given the assumptions. And once you got this all in numbers, then you can do survival curves hypothetically, you know, based upon the model that's created. You can compare urban and rural and what happens if the time is delayed or the EMS arrival is delayed. And so you can start to work with these things and do some of the interesting analyses that might be of, you know, relevant to whatever the topic is you're trying to investigate. Now, I know I've gone through this pretty fast, but it has just been published. I've got one copy of it here in Accident Analysis, and if everybody wants one, then you have to look it up and get your own. And I'd be glad to answer questions afterwards or hang around and talk about this more. But the basic conclusions are, and I realize I'm down to my last few minutes here, is that this bimodal distribution is just a data anomaly because people don't declare death until they've given up on trying to reverse cardiac arrest in the hospital, and that makes sense. But you can deal with this using a combination of interval sensing, and you can include time-varying covariates with a relatively simple algorithm that allows you to do it in the presence of interval sensing. And that, at least our finding is that if you do all that stuff, as you might expect, it's a good thing to have the ambulance come and get you, and it's an even better thing to get to the hospital, which is a little reassuring because if you don't do these maneuvers, you get kind of funny answers that seem to imply that when you get to the hospital, you're more likely to die, which somehow doesn't seem to be likely to be true. So anyway, I thank you for your attention, particularly all those who showed up despite all the highly publicized meeting that's conflicting with ours. And I'll be glad to answer questions later on.
We actually have 2 minutes if anyone has a burning question now. David, yeah. Great presentation as always. What do we know about how pervasive that interval is from time of EMS transport to workup by the physicians? Is that how common is there a long duration of workup so that
Well, it's present in NVDRS data as well for, you know, gunshots and things like that. So I think it's a real thing that makes it difficult to deal with the data in any time-to-event analysis unless you do something to account for the fact that death is being declared at different times for different groups of people, which is going to throw off your analysis if you don't deal with it somehow. Well, there probably is. I haven't looked at that. Obviously, it takes longer in rural areas to get to the hospital. But I think in most hospitals, you know, the whole business of declaring people dead on arrival and doing nothing, I mean, there's some variability in that. But most people, if there's any chance, are going to give the guy a fighting chance for a while. And I think the practice of declaring death at the time that the intervention ceases is a pretty general rule of how it's done, although there's nothing, you know, legalistic about it. I think that's just what doctors do. The time of death is now, not half an hour ago. Gordon?
Yeah, I think it's really fascinating. If you really, the advantage of the motor vehicle is you've got these time steps and the crash stuff. It'd be really interesting at following suggestion using the gun thing. Most other injuries, you don't get such good timing, that's a unique thing. But by trying to put together police reports and time of the shooting, even for some of these delay cases that don't get picked up, someone that might be witness taken, it might be harder to do, but I think it would be really fascinating to compare the model for that. It's really a good idea.
Thank you.